parfait.
Two massive games today. We talked about two of the sort of underdogs of the tournaments on their way out yesterday. Well, be a little bit of a surprise, really, if any of these teams exit. They're going to be closely enough matched games. Argentina versus Brazil. Bit of rivalry there going back to the Super Classico. And maybe one that's not quite as well remembered. West Germany versus Netherlands. A seriously bit of rivalry in this one. And we'll get onto that in a little while as to why that is. But we start off with Argentina Brazil. And I've talked about Brazil being more pragmatic. I think each time we talk about them, we mention how they've moved away from Samba. But we should really focus on Argentina for this one, because probably during this tournament, and maybe a little bit before, you would say, their tactics were very much survivalist tactics with sprinklings of individual brilliance. Their coach, Bilardo, he's a bit of a reputation, or certainly had at this point, of just getting enough out of the team. Coming into the tournament, we talked maybe a bit about how Argentina weren't quite the team they were, but I mean, they'd had a pretty bad losing streak. I think they're about 10 games from a Copa America in 89 to, I think, a friendly just before this tournament with Israel, where they basically hadn't won a game. They ended up beating Israel in a friendly, and you know, that's no real way to break your duck. They're going all right in this so far, but probably just scraped through the group stages. But this game is where you pretty much have a pretty famous incident that has never been proven. The holy water scandal, if people remember that. They might not. I'll just give you a quick run through as to essentially what it is. It's claimed that the Argentinians gave the Brazilians waters with tranquilizers or rehypnol in it, apparently. Won't ever be proven. That's very much, we should say that right out of the gate. It will not be proven at this point, but various players are supposed to have admitted this. Claudio Ruggeri mentions it to Branco when they meet up years later. Branco, one of the players who supposedly given this dodgy water bottle. Bebeto claims to have had dinner with the physio responsible, Miguel Di Lorenzo, who apparently admitted everything. And Bebeto says, by the way he said it, I don't think it was just done to us. So essentially that they drugged other teams as well. I've also read, but I've never seen the clip, that apparently Maradona went on TV and talked about it, laughing about how anytime Branco tried to take a free kick after it, he fell over. Which is, again, absolutely scandalous that you'd go on and sort of have such a laugh about that. Once it sort of got, it was out there. Branco, I think, mentioned it a little bit after, but it never really was clung to at any serious degree. And it sort of came back about 15 years after the tournament, around 2005, when it seemed to fall into the public domain. A lot of people talked about it quite a bit more. And Brazil's association then pretty much called for retrospective action by FIFA, claiming that they'd have a big dossier full of proof to Sepp Blatter. But again, you have to wonder what kind of proof would have been in there. Really is astonishing if it's true. When you think about, we talked about Mexico in this tournament. Mexico were banned for two tournaments for fielding an overage player in the Olympics. So, I mean, this is so much worse. It's unbelievable. And Bilardo in 2005 has the cheek to say, basically, they ask him about it. I'm not quite sure if he's still working at this point. I would suggest probably isn't. But he's asked about it and he just says, I'm not saying it didn't happen. So that's pretty much as much background as we can get. I mean, no one seems to have done that much of a deep dive on this. There's been plenty of football documentaries, probably one that's needed. But probably no excuses for the Brazilians for all the missed chances throughout the game. In the blistering heat in front of 61,000 in the Della Alpi, Argentina are being absolutely battered and really at their survivalist best here. There's early chances to show you how unsteady Argentina are. Correca breaks one-on-one with a defender, and as he kind of breaks, his defender who's quite tight to him, he turns him, and as he's running from the halfway line, there is one Argentinian defender about 40 yards back, nearly outside his box. So not even, no attempts of playing the offside trap today for Argentina. They have pretty much a sweeper. I think it's Juan Simón sitting so, so deep. Correca pretty much runs unopposed past him, but Garcachea manages to stop his effort. And just minutes later, again, Correca breaks from deep, seems to be finding a lot of space in the middle. He finds Branco out wide, who crosses into Dunga. Dunga heads it off the post, and it's a free header. You could probably argue he should do a little bit better, but he's quite reaching towards that header. It's just a little bit far off, and his neck is kind of strained out. Must be said, one of the stranger chances comes early in the second half. Kareka had been very, very busy in this game, although doesn't seem to be having much luck in front of goal. He crosses from the left, probably slightly slices it, mishits it, and it ends up sort of over Gorkachea. And Turlock, I know you've been pretty critical of Gorkachea throughout this tournament, despite the praise he was lavished in. He pushes it onto his own bar when it's not heading in, so he very nearly scores the most infamous goal or own goal that a World Cup would have ever seen if he was to push that into his own net.
Yeah, I'm going to ease up on Gorkachea. I think I've taken the revisionism far enough that I'm veering into Dunphy territory, so I'm going to say that was a good save.
Well, Roy Keane territory more so, as we heard on the last podcast.
Experienced international goalkeepers. Madness. I'm not joking here.
Yeah,
I don't need to see him stats. I know he's not a good goalkeeper. He's a football
England
club.
Goalkeeper.
I don't care. Yeah. He's not a good goalkeeper.
The Argentinians then essentially failed to clear from that. So Gorkachea pushes it onto the post and it's all a bit panicky. They try to clear it. It just kind of rolls out to Alamau. He has a crack from outside the box, which kind of hits the corner where the post and the crossbar meet and it goes out wide. So just let off after let off for Argentina. And with about an hour gone, Argentina have the whole team behind the ball, just hanging on by any means possible. Brazil have managed to keep Maradona pretty quiet for the most part. A few fouls here and there, and generally just playing in Argentina's half so that Maradona's not really finding any way through, any space, any break. He does get it. It generally isn't falling to him. Fell to Trudio or the odd-time Caniggia. But with 9 minutes left, Brazil find themselves in a situation where it just shouldn't be a problem. Maradona finally strikes and manages to do something in the game. He gets the ball around the centre circle, he starts dribbling to the left, cuts back into the right around Alamau. Dunga tries to foul him, just as he leaves the centre circle, but he doesn't manage to. At this point, there's still four Brazilian defenders back, with Caniggia running on and Maradona running at them. So you're thinking, look, they've got this under control. Just one or two, you know, shift them out. He basically dribbles towards these defenders. All four defenders converge on him. As Caniggia runs off to the left, Maradona goes right, with four defenders around him, and manages to just poke the ball over to Caniggia. Caniggia then just rounds the goalkeeper and slots it into the empty net. Taffarel only looks on. You wouldn't say this is an upset to any great degree, barring if you've watched the game. I mean, it's got to be up there with the Argentina-Cameroon game for an upset if you've watched the game. There's just no chance this was going to happen. They've clearly taken to heart what Bilardo told them after the Cameroon game. He told them, we reach the final, or we hope the plane carrying us home falls out of the sky. So they live to fight another day in terms of that. But really, it's a stunning game showing you maybe something we suspected earlier. Brazil don't quite have the players who have that ability for the individual moments of brilliance. You look at the goals they scored maybe against Scotland and stuff like that. It comes down to these players who are able to get on the end of stuff pretty quickly. All the drugs and that kind of stuff aside, it's not a deserved victory for Argentina, but they've managed to just scrape through again by surviving and again by some absolute brilliance from Diego Maradona, who, as we say, despite being kicked, I mean, we mentioned his ingrown toenail issue, that supposedly he got about 5 or 6 injections at halftime, they're saying. So maybe he was quite as drugged up as the Brazilians by the end, but as it is, he's the man who manages to create this individual moment of brilliance. And Caniggia, once again, being the main man to slot home.
This is actually, I think, my we didn't really have the concept of an assist in 1990, but this is my assist to the tournament. And I think it shows why Maradona is as well regarded as he is, because he wasn't really particularly on form in this tournament. But he was also just a tough little bastard. And you can see that the way he holds off defenders. Like, he's practically on the ground when he plays this ball. It's a stunning pass, and it's a great finish. And I think, yeah, even if this isn't remembered as the apex of Maradona's career, his assist for this goal is kind of all you need to see to know all about his character.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And probably the legendary image from the end of this that I always remember is Maradona with the Brazil shirt on. I'm not sure whose shirt he actually got, but it just feels an inappropriate time for him to be wearing it. He's celebrating like absolute crazy with the team after such a big result. And there he is standing in a Brazil shirt. I always think, look, once you swap shirts, just leave it over your shoulder, and not to get too Souness or Roy Keane about it all. But
I think it's the hugging that Roy's not happy with.
You're going to war. You know, hugging and kissing. Don't even look at the opposition. You're going to battle against them. Chat to them after the game. Well, don't even chat to them after the game.
And maybe you swap shirts at halftime.
Well, we've got another pretty contentious one here for West Germany, Netherlands. Dave, I'll let you take it from here, but if you want, I might touch on maybe just some of the stuff pre-tournament that led to the bad blood in this game. I mean, it's obviously a history from these two sides going back to World War II, but historically, that's one thing. The sort of nitty-gritty of it all stems from incidents before this tournament. Van Basten got a late winner against Germany to send Netherlands through to the Euro 88 final. So there was bad blood over that and you know, an element of wanting to get revenge, but it was apparently an instance of Ronald Koeman pretending to wipe his arse with Olaf Thorne's shirt. Just as we're mentioning shirt swapping after the game. That's apparently a situation. I don't think I've ever seen that. There was also an issue in the qualifiers where the Dutch crowd unfurled a banner comparing Lothar Matthäus to Hitler. So it was all a little bit uncouth. And relationships aren't great going into this with two very, very competitive and, you know, headstrong sides, I suppose.
It's a game that always carries heavier significance than just the game. I think maybe ourselves, our supposed rivalry with England, or even England's supposed rivalry with Germany, it's not. It's maybe a one-sided rivalry, but this one is very much a two-sided rivalry, maybe similar with England-Argentina. So the two teams going into the game, they don't really like each other that much. Maybe the Netherlands are a bit more kind of motivated in that regard than the Germans, but yeah, it's kind of one of those strange games where almost all the drama didn't involve anything to do with the goals. It was in the first half, Frank Rijkaard, who I think would probably be your stereotypical not one of those players, lost his head completely. And Brian Moore on ITV, commentating on the game at the time, noted that I'm just finding it in a little bit way disappointing that Frank Rijkaard, who is also such a talented player, seems today to have such a negative role just looking after Jurgen Klinsmann. I suppose it's the irony of the situation is that it wasn't Jurgen Klinsmann that he ended up looking after. It was Rudi Fuller, who went on to famously manage Germany at the 2002 World Cup.
Just to cut in there, Dave, I think everyone was fairly surprised at Rijkaard's involvement in it. And not just when you say Brian Moore. If you look at some of the quotes from players after, they all kind of say, like, oh, I really rated him and he's a really good guy. And, like, they all probably knew each other relatively well. Maybe some of them played together and all that kind of stuff. It just seems so weird. It shows you the red mist that can really sort of devolve at times when a player is not in a good place.
As I said, he's not one of those players. Who would you compare it to? It's like
El Hadji Diouf?
Yeah, the opposite of him. Whatever the opposite of him is.
Well, the outcome was the same. Yeah.
Kareka, Branko, Dunga, hit the post! This is Kareka. Oh, he did it, put it into his own goal, look at you. This is Maradona, and he gets the ball through, can he just score?
But to explain the situation, I guess, Rijkaard was looking after Klinsmann, but on one occasion, Fuller, who I think maybe has been overshadowed in recent years by the fact that Klinsmann went on to become such a great player. But Fuller was sort of the main man at that time and was considered, you know, the best striker in Germany. And he was skipping through on the edge of the box. And Rijkaard just, you know, cut him down. An unnecessarily robust challenge. He justly got booked for it. For whatever reason, I think maybe there was some kind of an ongoing dispute between the two, but Rijkaard chose to spit on him. Fuller, obviously, justifiably maybe, reacted badly to this and got a yellow card of his own. In hindsight, it's maybe a little bit harsh considering what happened to him. But
it's so undeserved. Like, he basically goes up to the ref and goes, man, he's like, there's spit hanging out of my hair. Like, look what's happened. I was like, nah, yellow card for you because you're annoying me. And also, just to say, I think what might have happened with Rijkaard is he just knew he was suspended for the next game.
He was out of the next game, yeah.
Yes.
Rijkaard, obviously, he went from bad to worse. He spat on Fuller, who got booked for having a bit of gauzy on his lovely blonde mullet. And they went into the box anyway. They went in for the free kick and Van Breukelen went up with Fuller. Again, Fuller didn't seem to do anything really. Van Breukelen came out and claimed the ball and maybe took exception to having a leg too near him. And it kind of breaks out and Rijkaard, as you say, red mist, tries to grab Fuller by the ear and pull him up. He ends up getting sent off. And Fuller reacts, and he's sent off as well. For what has to be two of the most unjust yellow cards you've ever seen in World Cup history. And as he's walking off, Rijkaard just decides, not enough has been done here. This guy hasn't been spat on enough. I need to rectify this situation. And he unleashes another Gozzi in his gorgeous mullet. I have to say, Fuller is the most... I've never seen somebody be spit on twice and take it so well. He's a joy to watch, really. Not being spit on, but he's just a joy to...
He's a joy to spit on, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, look at this. If you're going to choose somebody to spit on, I'm not recommending spitting on anyone. I'm not saying that I'm going to spit on anyone. But if you were going to spit on anyone and yet you had a choice, you'd say Rudy Fuller just because he's going to take it in the right spirit.
He's used to it at this point. I think one thing that should be mentioned in all this as well is how much of a disgrace Van Breukelen is for his part in the second yellow, because I've never seen such a pathetic attempt for a player. I know players always try and force contact now, but goalkeepers aren't good at it because they're not used to it. And Vuller kind of comes past him, and Van Breukelen nearly stretches his full body out attempting for Vuller to kick him and still makes no contact. And as you said, that leads to all this behaviour. Yeah, there's like two or three like spitting incidents, and weirdly, like, Rijkaard at no point thinks this is going to backfire on him, which is, again, maybe it's just players aren't really thinking of the cameras as much in those days, but it really is incredible. And ultimately, I'm not sure if you were going to mention this anyway, Dave. I was just going to jump in and talk about the advert they did to sort of bury the hatchet a few years later. Rudy Vuller talks to 442 and talks a little bit about this situation. He does mention Rijkaard apologised months later. That's too long for me. That's way too long for me. But yeah, they ask him basically, was there a load of money in it? Is that why him and Rijkaard did an advert later on? And he says, no, essentially the money went to charity, otherwise he wouldn't have joined in. He just said he'd do it for the charity and basically a public reconciliation. Under the slogan, it was for a butter company, everything in butter again, which is a German proverb meaning that everything is okay again. So there you go. A touch of class. I think you can.
I don't think that's going to catch on though.
No, well, it might have in Germany as far as we know, but surely there must have been a moment while filming that from Fuller that he just turned his head like this and then turned back really quick, like, don't you fucking spit on me again? Like,
I think he would have taken it better than that. I suspect he was probably expecting this to be spit on constantly. But anyway, to complete the game, because I think we've forgotten that there was an actual football game happened. Second half, 10 men against 10 men. Fuller out, Klinsmann in. And maybe this was kind of the game that was the making of him as an international World Cup striker, because he scored a very well taken finish early in the second half, hit the post shortly afterwards, and then Andreas Brehme, maybe people forget from left back, he scored an awful lot of goals. Your stereotypical Ian Hart style goal scoring left back, made it 2-0 late on. Holland did pull one goal back with a penalty through Ronald Koeman, but it wasn't enough in the end. 10-man Germany went past 10-man Netherlands onto the quarterfinals.
Brehme's goal is top notch as well, isn't it? It's he's just got a bit of space over on the left hand side, and we've seen him in this tournament be so effective. I mean, he's one of the best players at this tournament, certainly one of the best defenders. But he just cuts inside.
Best left back in the world, I'd say.
Yeah, but he just cuts inside on his right foot. And he has too much space, but he just curls one like so easily. Curls a top corner past Van Breukelen. And I also thought with Koeman after, like, Germany have missed a trick there if they've not fucking gone straight for Koeman's shirt after. Swap that with me, Ronald. Yeah, wipe the arse with it immediately, you know? Just to really put the bad feeling back in it, you know?
Rijkaard is the only player with a mullet, I think, in the team. Or a hullet, maybe.
Well, Hullet's not got a mullet. It's not really a mullet.
Hullet has dreads.
Yeah.
He had a mullet before, though, didn't he?
Couldn't tell you. Cannot remember. Wasn't born.
Okay, well, if surely what the Germans should do first is spit on somebody and then kind of think about wiping your ass with a shirt.
Nah, Vuller. See, this is the thing. When you're saying all that stuff about Vuller, to be fair to Vuller, he rose above it all and is now like the hero of this piece. I mean, realistically, he's the man accepting the apology. And if I'm not mistaken, Simon Cooper used their image. I think there was a whole thing about Simon Cooper used the image of these two, or certainly Rijkaard's image on it, on a book. And he ended up apologising for using it because it was like sort of out of character. And it was like, it was something, I can't remember what book it was, but it was obviously to do with...
Football Against the Enemy.
Yeah,
He does make the point in it that, you know, Rijkaard comes from a very different background and has probably a different attitude to Germany in the sense that, you know, his ancestors' primary antagonists would have been the Dutch, not the Germans.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I still just think, I think Roy Carr gets a little bit too much sympathy. Dave's even in there saying he's not this kind of lad. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's done it. He's done what he's done. He deserves the guff he gets for it.
No, yeah. I think he's just generally known as a good guy.
Yeah, and shouldn't be. Not after the okay. Not after the second one.
I see you can't forget, but I think Rudy Fuller is a lot more forgiving than you are, thankfully.
Right. Well, look, he did, as you said, everything in butter. So it's all good now. Right, well, let's look ahead. I mean, we've got one of the biggest days in Irish football history coming up tomorrow. So, Charlotte, how are we all looking over the Irish camp? Has Jack watched any footage whatsoever of Romania yet?
Jack has managed to, he's managed to catch a few glimpses of Romania, and as have the players. Paddy Bonner in particular has been watching Steaua Bucharest's cup final from, was it the year before? I'm not sure. When you think of the level of video analysis these days, is quite comical in many ways. So, you know, he's relying on something that's probably 18 months old. Yeah, it seems like the only change that's liable to happen is maybe, Jack says he's considering starting the Romania game the way Ireland finished the Netherlands game with the two big men up front. John Aldridge hasn't really impressed anyone, so it looks like there's a possibility he may go with the Cascarino-Quinn pairing up top against Romania. Other than that, it's really wall-to-wall Dunphy, which I'm sure Eamon Dunphy absolutely hates. Every pundit and kind of rent-a-quote hack has a view on Eamon's contretemps with Jack Charlton. Sunday Indo actually breaks down kind of for and against. Colm Tobin has a fairly tedious effort defending him to the hilt. But then Eamon McCann has a very thoughtful column. I suppose he describes Dunphy's sense of self-worth, but in a fairly friendly way. But he says, for those who don't know, Dunphy had walked off the RT panel, I think, at the previous World Cup, because Dermot Morgan had, in pre-Apres match days, Dermot Morgan had portrayed him unflatteringly in a sketch. and Dunphy said, or Eamon McCann says that Dunphy explained to him and some other kind of drinking friends up in Derry, "You don't understand, the sketch was blasphemous."
Do you know, weirdly, there's been suggestions that before Dermot Morgan died, he was working on another script about two ex-footballers as pundits living in an apartment. That was his role in it, was supposed to be loosely based on Dunphy. So we've been robbed of a bit more of that, unfortunately, when Dermot passed.
That would have been priceless, I think. Mm. But yeah, there's also, away from the Ireland camp, there's just to prove that English managers kind of ill-fated flirtation with faith healers didn't begin with Glenn Hoddle. Bobby Robson has brought in the 75-year-old faith healer Olga Stringfellow to try and work her magic or whatever equivalent on Brian Robson, but I think that may be even beyond her capabilities.
What did she do? Does it describe? I hope it's not the same stuff as what Hoddle had done to that stadium.
I don't know her precise
method. You didn't deserve to be alive.
But yeah, obviously Robson, unlike Ray Parler, didn't ask for a short back and sides and get ostracized for the rest of time. But yeah, it didn't work. He's not likely to play against Belgium. An interesting contribution as well from Billy Bingham, who has an interesting take on why the Republic play the way they do. They say it's because, he says it's because their strikers are too tall. They don't have a small, fast striker. If they had a small, fast striker, they could play different football. Now, they have a selection of about 7 strikers, so I think the cart is going firmly before the horse there. And also, the Sunday Independent, I think. It's the Independent, yeah. Canvasses the views of Ireland's children. And one of those views is from an 11-year-old Evan Fanning, who will be familiar to the Irish football journalism community now, who, if you're interested, he absolutely slams Jack Charlton and backs Eamon Dunphy to the hilt.
Who canvassed this opinion?
The Sunday Independent.
The Sunday Independent that was edited by Evan Fanning's dad?
Yes.
Well, tomorrow we're going to get into I would say slightly friendlier territory. We won't have as much spitting or drugging, I don't believe, as we did today. Tomorrow we're back to the real stuff, the real football, the big teams, Ireland, Romania in action, as well as the host Italy taking on Uruguay.
No doubt about it then, Rijkaard spat on Buller as he walked past him, and that, Bobby, is atrocious.
Bremer.
Goal, beautiful goal, Bremer. 2-0 West Germany, and they're into the quarterfinals.